The following podcast has been recorded under the influence of alcohol. While not intentionally offensive, things are said, feelings may be hurt, and so not given. Clearly, it's the beer's fault.
The Good Beer Bad Movie Night Podcast.
Welcome to episode 47 of Good Beer, Bad Movie Night, the podcast dedicated to movies of questionable quality and the frosty adult beverages that help make them tolerable. My name is Pete, and tonight's feature presentation from 1995, Johnny Mnemonic.
Try not to sound so enthusiastic.
I believe there was some discussion about, I like you guys this much, I hate you guys this much. I am now having a tangible example of how much Dave likes or dislikes, depending on how you want to look at it, me. So I...
It's empirical evidence.
It is.
On how much Dave likes us.
Right. It's not a lot, people. It's not a lot.
It isn't, no. No. And... yeah, so Dave picked us because it's his birthday month. So this
Yay,
is entirely his fault.
Yay.
Happy birthday, Dave. Burn in hell. being Dave's birthday month, he's going to start us off.
Demon Dave's birthday month?
Dave's going to do our six-minute synopsis tonight where he promises that he will not exceed 6 minutes or he's going to sing us a song.
Well, I think I've got it pretty close. I tested it out. I think I'm okay.
Excellent. After Dave's amazing six-minute synopsis, we're going to take a break, come back with the first choice of beverage, and then we'll talk about this movie.
Yeah.
Later on, we'll take another break, try another beer, and wrap up the evening with our six-pack rating, where we let you know just how drunk you have to be to enjoy this film. Again, my name is Pete. I don't even want to introduce you, Dave. I mean, this movie. You have a knack. You have a skill set, sir, of picking some of the shittiest. Anyway, hi, Dave. Happy birthday, sir.
Your tears are delicious.
Suffering along with me, Troy. How you doing, bud?
I'm hanging in there. How you doing, Pete?
I'm well, sir. And always bringing up the rear.
Excuse me? Uncalled for. Rude.
I would apologize, but not gonna. Hi, Kathleen. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. You know, the reason you get away with insulting me is because we're doing this virtually.
Right. Yeah. Right. I have to get them in while I can.
Hopefully.
I'm keeping track. So I have a little list in my book of punches. Ooh. I owe Pete. So.
Oh, shit.
One.
Do you have like a punch jar where you put a nickel in it every time?
Exactly.
I would
retire
hate to see...
soon.
We're up to $72.
Oh, no.
That's a lot of nickels.
So, as mentioned earlier, tonight's film is Johnny Mnemonic.
I feel like that's how the people in the marketing campaign also said the title of this movie back in 1995 after watching it and trying to figure out how to make money.
Oh, I have notes about the marketing campaign for Johnny Mnemonic, but we'll get to that.
Oh, boy.
I hope that's more interesting than the movie is. Oh. So, like I said, Dave's going to do our six-minute synopsis. So, unless anyone has anything else.
Okay. Give me a count.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, open on a credit call reading, second decade of the 21st century, corporations rule. The world is threatened by a new plague, NAS, nerve attenuation syndrome, fatal, epidemic. Its cause and cure are unknown. The corporations are opposed by the low-tex, a resistance movement risen from the streets. Hackers, data pirates, guerrilla fighters, and the info wars. Corporations defend themselves. They hire the Yakuza, the most powerful crime syndicates. They sheath their data in black ice, lethal viruses waiting to burn into brains of intruders. But the low-techs wait in their strongholds in the old city cores like rats in the walls of the world. The most valuable information must sometimes be entrusted to mnemonic couriers, elite agents who smuggle data and wired brain implants. Open on a bright CGI corridor of electronic lights and streams of pulsing data, the Internet 2021. Dun, dun, dun. We follow one of the lights as it races down a path and emerges on a television screen in a room at the New Darwin Inn. It's 10:30 a.m. Wake-up call on Thursday, January 17, 2021, for Johnny, a half-naked Keanu Reeves. A beautiful woman gets dressed while Johnny reveals he doesn't remember where his home is. Apparently bored with the conversation, she uses a flimsy excuse and leaves. With his newfound solitude, Johnny uses the television as a phone to call his employer, Ralphie, about an upcoming procedure to remove Johnny's implants. Ralphie informs him that the price has increased and Johnny will have to do one more big courier job to cover the cost, so long as his memory implant capacity has been upgraded. On the way to meet the client at the Beijing hotel room, Johnny walks through a crowd of protesters wearing PPE masks, so maybe this movie isn't so inaccurate after all. On the elevator ride up, he uses the device to double his data storage to 160 gigs, warning him not to exceed capacity. He meets the very nervous clients who want Johnny to carry 320 gigs to Newark, explaining that if the upload exceeds his capacity, synaptic seepage may occur and kill him and render the data useless within a few days. Johnny lies and says his storage is adequate. Okay, here's the process. Data is uploaded to his brain and encrypted using three random images. Johnny won't know the nature of the data or what the three images are. Upon arriving in Newark, three images are used to recall the data from his brain, hence the mnemonic part of Johnny Mnemonic. Got it? Good. Anyway, they upload the data, snap three random encryption images from the television, and print them out on a photo booth-style strip. In the meantime, Shinji, a Yakuza enforcer with ornate right thumb covering, along with a team of hitmen, approach in an elevator to reclaim the data. We learn the nervous clients are defecting Pharmacom R&D defectors and presumably smuggling private corporation data. After the upload, Johnny's all fucked up because he overloaded his brain, so he goes to the bathroom to calm down while the nervous clients hastily destroy all the original data and fax the three unlock images to Newark. Suddenly, the Yakuza burst in, killing everybody with futuristic-looking guns that are actually paintball guns. Johnny tries to escape with the unlock images when Shinji pulls off his thumb to reveal a glowing garrote wire, actually a monomolecular filament that lined with one molecule wide, able to cut through anything with ease. Shinji slices through the air, severing the image and leaving Johnny holding the remaining piece. Johnny escapes with prepared disguise, and Shinji learns Johnny is heading to Newark. Cut to Newark, with a really shitty Pharmacom building superimposed clumsily over what is definitely not Newark. Johnny arrives via Concorde jet, which is actually decommissioned in 2003, so whoops. Medical scan at immigration reads Johnny's illegal storage implant as a dyslexia device, but detects the dreaded synaptic seepage, and Johnny should seek medical attention within 24 hours before its brain turns into a turnip or something. Meanwhile, Shinji reports to his boss, Takahashi, head of Pharmacom, and we learn that Shinji and Takahashi's relationship is a little strained, and Takahashi's only child died recently, which will become relevant later. Irate, Johnny calls and yells at Ralphie, who sends Johnny to a place where the data can get extracted. After hanging up, Ralphie is accosted by Jane, an out-of-work cybernetically enhanced bodyguard who claims that Ralphie won't get her any work. Ralphie explains her cheap implants, tuned up by Physician Spider, played by Henry Rollins, makes her unemployable as a bodyguard. Cut back to Johnny, whose arrival at some dingy shithole corner of Newark to meet his data extractor, who ends up being one of the guys who tried to kill who killed the nervous clients. In the process, he saves and in turn is saved by J-Bone, leader of the Lotex of Heaven, a cluster of derelict cars suspended under an old abandoned highway overpass. Later, and understandably annoyed, Johnny confronts Ralphie, threatening to kill him unless he fixes the situation. Instead, Ralphie's bodyguards brains him and takes him to Shinji, and before Shinji can cut Johnny's head off, Jane agrees to rescue him for $50,000. Annoyed at their escape, Shinji slices Ralphie into gross, chunky body segments. Jane and Johnny escape into the subway with the help of J-Bone and the Lotex. Jane learns Johnny's story that he removed his childhood memories for the implant. Johnny starts suffering from flashes of data or memory or something as the synaptic seepage grows worse. Johnny learns about Jane's story that she kind of grew up with the Lotex. Desperate for a way to get the stuff out of his head, Johnny breaks into a computer store to get online, which is apparently an elaborate, glowing 3D virtual world navigated with VR goggles and haptic gloves. Johnny learns that he has a head full of Pharmacom data when the ghostly image of a woman warns them to escape the Yakuza who have been tracking their online activity. They manage to narrow escape, which Shinji reports to Takahashi. Now that he knows what's in his head, Johnny tries to contact Pharmacom, hoping they'll negotiate to get the data out of his head, when Jane suddenly becomes convulsing, revealing that she has the Black Shapes, or NAS. She gets Johnny to agree to take her to her Dr. Spider, who could help them both. In the meantime, frustrated by Shinji's repeated failure, Takahashi calls upon the street preacher, a psychotic preacher-themed contract killer, to retrieve Johnny's head. Johnny and Jane arrive at Spider's, who confirms that Jane has NAS, but he didn't cause it. Spider explains that NAS is caused by information overload. All the electronics around you poisoning the airwaves, technological fucking civilization, but we still have all this shit because we can't live without it, which again is an oddly prophetic criticism of 2021 society. He says he might be able to help Johnny, and they go to Spider's workplace. He finds out that the transmission was actually meant for Spider and the underground NAS network of doctors. They learn that Johnny has the cure in his head, but then boom, out of nowhere, the street preacher breaks into the unstoppable force, spouting scripture, kills everybody. On the way to Low Tech headquarters, Johnny is trying to escape to negotiate with Pharmacom, and then little does he know, he's actually telling everybody to to where to find him. They go to Lotec headquarters, where this guy Jones is supposed to help him get the shit out of his head, but Jones ends up being a freaking dolphin. Okay, whatever. Okay, anyway, Jones ended up being a code-breaking cyborg dolphin originally used by the Navy. So, of course, Shinji, the Yakuza, Takahashi, security forces, and street preacher arrive right as the cyborg dolphin tries to hack Johnny's brain, interrupting the process. A big nutty fight ensues, and Takashi confronts Johnny, and a ghostly eye appears and reveals that Takashi and Pharmacom had the cure for NAS. Shinji shoots Johnny in the back, and the big dumb fight, Shinji getting decapitated by his own monomolecular garrote wire, street preacher gets microwaved by robo-dolphin and fried by live electro wires. Anyway, turns out Takashi isn't dead. He hands Johnny part of the mnemonic key. The key, along with the robo flipper and AI ghost lady, help Johnny hack his own brain and extract the information safely, which the Lotecs transmit out into the world. Yay, fuck the system. Everyone should live in teepees. Finn.
6 minutes, 12 seconds.
Woo.
So you made it.
Yay.
Robo flipper. I
no
like that.
No singing for you.
Yay, no singing.
Dave, you remember the Micro Machines commercials?
Yes.
What was that guy's name?
John Machida.
That was impressive, though. That was a lot to get in 6 minutes.
I feel like you did that in one breath.
Seriously.
I'm a little dizzy, I'll be honest.
I believe it.
Well, let's get you a little more dizzy and go grab our first beer.
Okay.
Woot.
Excellent.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Damn it.
Dave, you got one job. That's not true, Dave. You have lots of jobs.
There it is.
Okay. So this is a beer from Scotland, from the Orkney Brewery. It is called Skull Splitter. And Dave, go ahead and let us know about this guy.
This is the Skull Splitter, 5,000 years in the making, from the Orkney Brewery. It's a Scottish ale. It's, according to the description on the website, it is rich, fruity, silky. Skull Splitter is one of our strongest beers, named after Thorfinn.
Oh, hell.
Einarsson, the seventh Viking Earl of Orkney. It's sophisticated, satiny, smooth, and full-flavored beer. It has rich, fruity, wine-like complexity with flavors of fresh and dried fruits, warm exotic spice, and mellow summer fruity notes. And they are not kidding. It is very fruity on the nose.
And very smooth.
Mm. Yeah. Satiny is a very good description.
Yeah, it's got a high malt aroma to it. I mean, just caramely. As I'm smelling it.
It's really interesting. It's not like any beer I've had in a long time.
The ABV is 8.5%, so it's a little high octane. And IBU is 23, so it should be very malt heavy.
Definitely is malty.
Very malty.
But there is...
delicious, though.
Yeah, the sweetness that's there is not like the... I mean, I guess there is some of that smokiness that you get in like a really malty beer, but there is some fruit to it, too, which is weird for a malt.
I'll disagree with you, Troy. I think a lot of your maltier beers will have a dark fruit, raisin.
Okay, dark date. Fruit. But I think of this more as fresh fruit flavor, you know?
Oh? Oh, okay. I'm getting dates.
Yes, definitely dates.
Although on the front side, there is a fresh citrus zest, not necessarily an orange rind.
I mean, smelling it, the nose, you would think that it's going to be a lot stickier than it is, but it's really not sticky. Mm-hmm.
It isn't. You're right, Dave. It's clean. Surprising for the aroma, for sure. Not so surprising for the ABV, because a high ABV like this will clean up pretty quick.
Mm.
If it were like a 5 or even 6% beer, ooh, this would just be heavy
mm-hmm.
in the mouth. Like, oh,
heavy in the mouth
in
feel?
The belly. I'm trying real hard.
It's got a very tight carbonation. That head is staying there for a long time.
And how is that head in the mouth?
Creamy.
What did you say?
No, I didn't say no. Nobody. I didn't. You did. What?
Right.
I never do.
I'm not sure what's going on here.
That's the way I felt about this movie. Didn't know what was going on.
But it was so well acted.
Oh, God.
No. Look, we do a lot of things on this podcast. We do not lie to the listeners.
This is true. Have we seen a range from Keanu ever?
I think this is his best performance since Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I'm gonna defend our pal Keanu here for a second.
Oh.
Not because I think he's the most stellar actor for sure, but he has proven over the course of a long time in the public eye to be a really, really good dude. I have a tendency to want to give him a little bit of a break. And I will say that he is a person who needs a really good director. He is a person who needs a really good script.
You know, I thought you were going to defend his performance, in which case I was like, continue. I'd like to hear this. But I kind
of
figured...
last thing that I said when I was taking my notes is that this movie is full of bad acting and bad lines. And about halfway through is when I wrote down, this whole movie feels like a art school final project where every department had to come together to make one project.
It is. It's funny you bring that up about this being an art film. Originally, it was supposed to be an art film. It was supposed to be like a small, low budget adaptation of a William Gibson short story. I was a big fan of William Gibson as a kid. And I actually read Johnny Mnemonic. It was a short story in an anthology called Burning Chrome. And this movie ain't that. Not at all.
No.
I think that the director, and I think this was his only feature film directing credit. Everything else is like videos.
I wouldn't give this
like,
dude money to make another movie after watching this if I was a Hollywood bigwig.
I honestly would have felt the same way about the guy who directed Ghost Rider. And yet they gave him more movies. No, he directed Daredevil, and they gave him at least two or three more movies. I'm like, no, stop giving this guy money. Stop. It really could have been a very low-budget movie because, like, all the slick graphics and the costumes and, like, the elaborate sets and stuff like that, yeah, it was what people in the 90s thought the future was supposed to be, but it wasn't really a vision of what William Gibson imagined this kind of future to be. Like William Gibson, the whole idea of a lot of his fiction, his science fiction, is high-tech low lives. It's people with like advanced technology, way advanced, more advanced than ours, but like street criminal level. So like the idea of a smuggler with a brain implant where he can smuggle information and only be able to extract it using mnemonic devices. Like it's that kind of stuff. But this was a big misalignment because it was supposed to be like this dirty, grimy, not like people wearing these high concept outfits and like weird suits and virtual reality. Remember virtual reality and how it kind of came back somehow?
Yeah. No. Everyone's getting those Oculus things. And
Well, I mean, do you remember like back in the 90s, like there's movies like The Lawnmower Man. Remember that one?
Oh, yes.
I have that written down. I specifically have that film written down, yes.
I didn't see it. I just remember the commercials from TV of like streams of green numbers running.
Yeah.
It's real
bad. Some
guy
screaming, ah-ha! With like Phil Spector hair.
Like, I am God here.
Yeah.
I just like the fact that the Nintendo Power Glove is making a comeback again.
What?
That's what the hand things look like when he's directing the internet like a invisible orchestra.
Yeah, who knew in 2021 that's how we'd be interacting with the internet is with gloves and goggles zooming around through Tron.
Yeah.
So this is three movies we've had in the last 6 months that have featured the Power Glove, isn't it?
Three?
We had The Wizard and Turbo Kid and this
Turbo
one.
Kid. I forgot it was on Turbo Kid. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
Clearly, we desperately want an extension of our hand to do some kind of internet power computery thing.
No comment.
And it when Dynamonic is using his power gloves, I wonder if what Tony Stark does in the Avenger movies, if we'll look back at that in 30 years and go, oh, that's what you thought the internet was going to be in 2050 or something like that.
Yeah, I did think about that when they break into that computer place or wherever and build the computer from the components on the shelves, and he's like wildly gesturing, Yeah, I thought about it, but my thought was, okay, the CGI in Avengers and that kind of thing, it's still, everybody in the room sees it. Tony swipes his hand and the screen shows up and everybody looks at it. Keanu, to anybody else looking in the room with him, or Johnny Mnemonic, whatever, he just looks like a madman waving his arms around because nobody else can see what he sees because he's got the big glasses on.
Oh, did anybody catch the when he's in that place, that store, which incidentally I think was called Crazy Bob's Computer Shop.
Crazy Bob. Yeah, they say that later.
Mm-hmm. He asks for Thompson iPhones.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Which are the goggles, I assume.
I wrote that down, too. I was like, did Johnny Mnemonic just predict the future? I mean, I haven't seen the script. Was it iPhone or EYE phone?
I think it's EYE phone. EYE hyphen.
Yeah, probably.
Not like, you know, the Apple iPhone.
Right.
Clearly, Steve Jobs stole from Johnny Mnemonic.
That makes sense.
There were some oddly prophetic, there's odd predictions. Like, I'm almost positive that the production team or the director did not consult like a futurist, but they did make some odd predictions, like a pandemic in 2021. I mean,
yeah,
that hit home a little hard.
Yeah,
and they're fighting cops.
And they're fighting cops.
I mean, I know.
Kevin's like, goddamn, what are we in for here?
He starts walking across that screen, and Troy's like, oh my god, they're wearing masks. This feels a little real. And I said, and they're fighting cops. This is maybe a little closer to home than we want it to be.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm watching the news.
Oh. But you know what? If they were really concerned about infection or contagion, they wouldn't have been all gathered together with masks on.
Good point.
Yeah. Of course, I don't. Yeah, I don't know.
There was no 6 feet between people.
Well, their signs all said, stop the gas. And it was definitely like cloudy and whatever where they were doing it. But
I think it was NAS, because that's the name of the disease.
Yes.
NAS.
Oh, maybe that's what
Nerve Attenuation Syndrome.
I was maybe only about 75% paying attention to this movie. But
although, it might have been like masks to protect against like particulate in the air and smog and stuff like that, which is also projected to be like a problem in the future back then.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Well, I think it was a big problem back then, especially in heavily populated upcoming countries.
Oh, not even upcoming. Like now, like in Asia, wearing pre-pandemic in like densely populated Asian cities, masks are pretty common.
Like young industrial countries coming up, they just gave no shits about environmental control and just allowed anyone to pollute whatever, and now everybody's got to wear a mask or they'll come home with black lines.
Well, funny you say that. Like when I was in Vietnam, it was not uncommon to see people wearing masks because like everybody was on motorbikes and like there's a tremendous air pollution problem and people wore masks just so they could breathe. But I also know in places like in China, in densely populated areas of China, like they wear masks just to protect themselves from smog. So like they were a little ahead of us on the mask game, but behind us in the emissions control game.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think it's because we made all of that mess when we had our own industrial revolution, but our country wasn't as densely populated at the time.
And honestly, even post pandemic, I don't think the masks are going away. They're here forever. I mean, this makes sense. Like, has anybody gotten the flu this year? I didn't.
Yeah.
No.
But going back to what you were saying, Kathleen, about the marketing, this is actually one of the first coordinated efforts, marketing efforts for a movie that also involved the internet. Like there were, there were augmented reality games. Like, and if you like looked at some of the stuff in the movie and you went to that website or whatever, it had clues that led you to more clues, like scavenger hunt style. It was kind of cool. They sold like coffee mugs and t-shirts, like Hack Your Brain, and all of it kind of, it was
for nothing.
I was pursuing the effort of trying to promote a shit movie.
I kept waiting for Arnold Schwarzenegger to pop up and say one of the lines, because that's what half the lines felt like, that they, you know, that they were just so
nice to meet you.
They were that kind of, it did not feel that any two characters, even when they were talking to each other, were actually having a conversation. It felt like, I'm going to say this sentence at you and pause while you say a sentence at me. Like there was no actual communication happening.
I will say when Johnny and the girl kissed at the end, I was like, wait, where'd that come from? Why would you kiss each other? There's nothing going on here. They're like,
there was,
you haven't
nothing,
even like
movie,
liked
right?
each other the most of the movie. I mean,
yeah, there was another moment where they almost kissed, and Ice-T told them that they had another room for that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
So. Oh, Ice-T.
Yeah, Ice-T wearing some sort of Whoopi Goldberg wig and ski goggles. That's what I kept thinking. He's wearing ski goggles and a Whoopi's
right.
hair.
Apparently, that's what the leader of a anti-technological society looks like. That's trying to break the system down from the inside.
Right.
That's
right.
how they dress.
Right.
Which, I mean, that actually has echoes of Anonymous today, where yeah. like people try to break stuff down. But like, and I kept thinking to myself as I was watching, like. Like, if you were part of some sort of underground movement trying to disseminate information that helps everybody, why would you dress so conspicuously? Why would you not just be a person?
With, like, a black lines on your face.
Yeah, and an anarchy symbol tattooed on your forehead.
Right.
Yes.
On your forehead.
Well, or why would you make your secret lair a giant bridge built of scrap metal cars and all stacked together, like very easily found in the middle of a giant.
Yeah, imagine if you were like law enforcement or if you were like part of these corporations, like we need to get the low techs. Like, okay, point over there. Like, there they are.
Right.
Just go get them.
I want to see the day that they brought the dolphin in. That's all I'm saying. I want to know, like, did they know they were getting a dolphin? Did they already have the dolphin cage built and put together and full of water?
And that was a dolphin, right? That looked like an actual dolphin that they just had a bunch of crap stuck to it.
Oh, no, I don't think it was a real dolphin.
It was a puppet.
That was a really good dolphin puppet.
So the dolphin killed Dolphin Lundgren. I'm already going to hell.
That's great. I like that.
Pretty good, Dave. Well done.
I liked his Wi-Fi Bible that had like a little TV screen inside the Bible. Like on, open it to page 100, and there's a little whatever.
Yeah,
it's where he's watching porn while he preaches.
Yeah. Well, I like how they had like that. Vertical 80s stand-up phone where the keypad is on the top of it and it's it was bright red and you punch it in but then you have to hold it while you FaceTime with a screen that's across from you. Like, I was like, so you need two devices to do this?
That was a payphone too.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
With a calling card.
Yeah, with a calling card. That was the piece that I was like, oh, the 90s.
Well, when he was holding that piece of that red handset he was holding is actually a lineman's handset. Phone company like technicians used to use when they would try to test stuff and make phone calls. But why would you have that in 2021 in a computer store and then use it along with a calling card, which people haven't used since the 90s?
Because you got to hack the telephone. You can't just call somebody. Right. It was an unlisted number.
That's true.
I mean, the guy said so.
That's true.
How did you get this?
Dave questions the technology. I question that there are still fax machines being used.
I question that there are still fax machines being used today.
There are
seriously
still fax machines being used today. That's insane to me.
I like that Ice-T told the world to get their VCRs ready when they are going to release the cure for the NAS.
Yes, which I was like, okay, so if you record that, how does that cure everybody? I mean, obviously they're hoping the right person records it and then is able to use the information. But I was just like, okay, what was I supposed to do with it? So
right. What was that information that they were, I mean, like it was the cure for the plague or the pandemic.
Right.
But like, what the hell was it supposed to be? And
exactly.
Looks like a video. Like they really should have zipped that. I mean, like if that was 380,
right.
320 gig.
Oh, I know.
The adorable 360 gig.
I know.
It was so cute.
I know. When he said that he had 80 gigs, I was like, ooh, I think my Apple Pencil has more than that in it. And it doesn't even remember things.
Right. All my thumb drives have no less.
And also, let's think for a moment. Okay, like if you try to, let's say you have a thumb drive that's, 32 gig. If you try to upload something that's 64 gig in it, it won't destroy the flash drive. It'll just not upload it.
Right.
Right.
That's what I was saying.
Or it'll upload.
It'll say this is too
gigs
big
of it
too bad.
And then stop.
I'm so assuming that his mind had to absorb the rest. That's why it was seeping.
Right. Yeah. I guess my thought is that it's not stored in an implant in his head. Like the implant actually stores it in his brain.
Mm-hmm.
So
I just think it's kind of a stupid concept of like to smuggle information, you have to put it into somebody's brain. I mean, like, I understand that that's the way that most information works, but to, like, actually take it from one place to another, there seems like there'd be better
Right. Why can't you just have a jump drive that, like, lives underneath, like, a little skin pocket?
Well, like, the scientists brought, like, the little disc. Just take that disc and walk over to somebody else and give it to them. Or, fuck, you got the disc. Just put it on the internet, which is out there in 2021.
Well,
and,
you know, I think the idea was, like, internet is trackable. Like, put the disc. Right. Yeah, like, grab the disc, hollow out the heel of your boot. Stick the disc in your boot, go fly to Newark, and give it to the guy that you need to give it to. Like,
yeah. I think it had something to do with the idea that you couldn't travel with tech. Like, it's like that concept of, like, walking through the metal detectors at, like, airports and things. They can detect that. So it has to be protected on the inside of your skull. But
he did get scanned, and they found the dyslexic.
Right, right. Implant.
Anti-dyslexia.
Right.
Or whatever it was.
I might be wrong. I think Keanu Reeves is dyslexic.
You're correct.
Yes.
Oh, is he?
So I wonder if that was a nod.
They wrote that in. That's cool.
To him. Mm-hmm.
I think you're correct. I think he is dyslexic. I mean, a dig at him would have been like, this would have been your acting implant. Oh, sorry.
Wow.
I do love Keanu. I do love Keanu Reeves. And as far as I'm concerned, like, he can do whatever he wants and he can do no wrong.
Yeah. He disappeared into the dog boy. On Freaked. Yes, I didn't even realize it was him.
Didn't even
there you go.
Know.
There's some range for you.
Right.
But he had to put a mask on to do it. My favorite Keanu part was when they revealed the dolphin to him and he was supposed to look surprised. He just kind of stood there.
It's a fish.
there was no expression. No, there was no expression on his face. Plastic face. Right?
Honestly, although, like, of all the poorly performed parts of every actor in this movie, the crown jewel of all of them, like the absolute culmination, the peak, has to be his weird rant toward the end.
Yes. I wrote down, I want room service!
I want the club sandwich! Yes. I want a $10,000 a night hooker!
Yes. Exactly. He wants his shirts laundered.
Like they do at the Imperial Hotel in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Like, and I remember seeing that for the first time, like, in the 90s, thinking, like, oh, like, I feel like this guy doesn't have a future.
Even as a young person, you're like, oh, that's not acting. That's reciting lines at a higher volume.
Yeah.
But then 3 years later, he'd be in The Matrix. Who knew?
Right. I did ask Troy when we were watching this. I was like, is this movie before or after The Matrix? I feel like there were a couple things, kind of just general ideas of this movie that felt a little Matrix-y.
There were a bunch, and I thought, I almost really sat down and really watched it closely, and then I thought better of that. But I almost played a game this month. Was it in The Matrix? Was it in Johnny Mnemonic? Or was it in both?
Yeah.
Like Keanu Reeves with an import in his head.
That was one of them. There were twins with white hair. At the very end of this film, the cyber lady.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she says something to the tune of, like, that the company was removing pieces of her, and she was slowly losing her connection to the mainframe. Mm-hmm. And I swear to God, the first time I watched this, I thought she was going to say The Matrix. And I almost had, like, oh, please say Matrix.
I'm
please say Matrix.
Ask, who is the cyber lady that keeps popping up and then, like,
okay.
I never got that.
She was the AI that used to be a person who was the CEO of Pharmacom in Sweden or Switzerland. But her consciousness was uploaded into whatever. And
Matrix.
Right. And she
mainframe.
She was apparently this is a regular occurrence or relatively common occurrence because there were laws in place protecting AI since 2006.
That's interesting.
Wow, you picked
Yeah, I was watching the movie a little bit more closely than
apparently.
Well, you were doing the 6 minutes,
and
so
she's his mom.
You needed to.
She's Johnny Mnemonic's mom.
What are you?
I didn't pick that up.
Yeah,
she's in all the flashbacks where they're like, yay, happy birthday, Johnny. And she, like, lays the cake down. Troy, you even said, that's a scary mom. And I was like, she's the ghost face mom from the previous scene. What are you talking about?
I didn't think that was her.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's why he wants all that rich stuff, because at one point he was born with a silver spoon, and then she croaked in 2015. He deleted all of his childhood memories because maybe that wasn't something he wanted to remember, because his mom died.
Right. But then also, like, there's parts of the movie where that kind of hit a little closer to home, like the mask thing, or like the NAS, what causes it, like just the information overload, like civilization. But we can't live without it, so we just tolerate it.
Right.
When Henry Rollins had his little speech, everyone's getting this disease because they can't put down their tech, because you can't do without it. And quite frankly, the human race has been lucky so far that technology hasn't caused something outside of a few unfortunate souls who get seizures from
it's killed, like, video all games and concentration such. For me, I'll tell you that.
I think that addiction to screen and addictions to phone are a real thing and a real issue. And I think it's something that could potentially get worse. I also, that whole scene too reminded me of the movie Strange Days with Ralph Fiennes, where everybody wears these kind of really subtle, you don't know that people have them on, almost like a GoPro. So it records everything that you do from your point of view.
Your experience recorder?
Yeah, it's like an experience recorder. And then you can take those files and you put them in this thing that looks like a skeleton that lays across the top of your head. And then you can play it back. And as the person who's watching it, you now become the person who's experiencing it. You feel what they feel, you see what they see, this whole thing. And it that movie deals with people with an addiction to that concept. And it kind of reminded me of that too.
But phones, addiction to screens, I think one of the there's a lot of people talk about this stuff. Like a lot of the side effects of everyone quote socializing through social media or through devices or phones and whatnot is they don't know how to interact with people, which is where you get the phenomenon of ghosting people, because when I look at somebody on the phone
or trolling people,
I can treat this person like shit because that person's not a person,
right?
Or I can just completely ignore this person I found on a dating app and I don't care about their feelings because they're not a person. They're something I'm shopping for on Amazon.
Well, and there's no negative recoil to you, the person who is the troll or the person who is ghosting, because you don't have to do it face to face.
Right.
You don't have to break up with somebody. Mm-hmm. You would never say, I think you're stupid, I think you're ugly, I hate this thing that you love, whatever, to somebody to their face. So that anonymity gives you this layer of protection, and they stop then being able to behave in a socially acceptable way.
Right. Okay, look at the degradation of, let's say, something that happens all the time, like a couple breaking up. Years ago, the idea of breaking up with somebody over the phone was considered extremely rude.
Right.
And then later, the idea of breaking up with somebody over an email or something like that. And then it became a text. And now people just ghost you. We broke up, but I didn't tell her we broke up. I just stopped talking to her.
Right.
The level of dissociation has just become worse and worse and worse. Like the distances that people put between one person and another have grown wider.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to link it back to Johnny Mnemonic somehow.
Well, nobody in that movie can communicate either. So, there's your connection right there.
I need to get the stuff out of my head. I also like Oreo cookies.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So weird.
What I also like is beer. Do we have more beer? We have more beer.
Yep.
Dave, I think we have one more, yes?
Let's do that.
Let's do that.
Cool. Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
Goodness. You okay over there?
I think I'm okay. Oh
my God. This smells so good.
Doesn't it, though? Oh yeah. When I cracked it, I'm like, oh, Jody, this smells so good. And it's one of my favorite breweries. Yeah, see.
It smells like turpentine.
Shut your mouth.
It does not smell like turpentine. It smells like fresh hops right off the vine.
God. Troy Carlson, why did you open two of these?
Because I'll drink the other
Troy's
one.
Troy's going to drink him.
Okay, real quick. Kathleen, I'm gonna be in your corner for a moment here. I like this. However, has anybody here actually had durian?
Yes.
Durian, it's a fruit. It
doesn't smell like durian, does it?
No, but there's a tropical element to it that's also mixed with like a sour kind of garbagey smell. And not in a pleasant, not an unpleasant way. Looks like lychee or lychee. I forget how to pronounce that. It's the sweetness mixed with something that seems like it's unpleasant, but isn't. So, Kathleen, I totally get the smell you're getting. However, I find it pleasant. Yeah. Durian famously it's a fruit native to like Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And it's like a mixture of vanilla and almonds and hot garbage.
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah. It is definitely not for everyone.
What a description. I kind of want to have it now.
Yeah, like imagine eating like a vanilla custard mixed with onions, like strong onions. That is not this, however. This happens to be the Three Floyds Arctic Panzer Wolf.
Yay!
This is, according to the website, a massive IPA that will leave your palate its hapless victim. Scorched earth is our brewery policy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so Kathleen, you will not like this beer, and I will.
No, it tastes like burnt grass.
I will drink the rest of it happily for you.
Uh huh.
Oh,
Troy, I'm coming over to help you.
Good.
This is just outside of the Geary, where it's at 9% ABV and 100 IPUs.
Yeah.
So
it's not. It's just outside the Geary. It's way, way, way far away.
For our listeners who are not familiar with the Geary is the theory come up with our buddy Gary, hence the Geary theory. Where if a beer's ABV statement is numerically similar to its IBUs, it's very balanced. IBUs are international bittering units, which is a measure of the bitterness of the beer, like its hop profile, I guess. And ABV is alcohol by volume. So let's say if you have a beer that's 6% ABV and 60 IBU, that's 6 and 6, makes it consistent, making it a very balanced beer. If the IBUs are higher, say, let's say 80 IBUs with a 6 ABV, then it's going to be hoppier. Mm-hmm. If the ABV is higher, like say a 9%, but the IBUs are 60 or so, it's going to be a maltier beer, a sweeter, stickier flavor. This one, the IBUs exceed the ABV, so it's going to be hoppier. Mm. And the hop is it's very tropical, very lychee,
that's
tropical
a good
fruit.
Call. Lychee is a good call. It's got that high sweetness because, you know, you're used to like the citrusy flavor that you get from hops,
like,
and it's
like
not
lemony, yeah. It really doesn't have any of that citrus that you would normally associate. Yeah.
You're right. Lychee's a good call. Still like fruity but sweet.
I think it's delichi.
Is it delicious?
Kathleen is not as
she's not a fan.
Because it does have that grassiness a little bit, I guess.
It's lychee, like those poor boys in Stand By Me when they come out of the water and they're covered in leeches. That's
leeches.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's good. That's a good one. The bottle is cool. It's got what looks like a wolf or a werewolf on it. Arctic Panzer Wolf. I saw this bottle at the bottle shop, Perfect Pour, in Dublin, Ohio. Off Sawmill Road. If you're close to Central Ohio, definitely check the place out. Those guys very much know what they're talking about.
They absolutely know what they're talking about.
But no, this is enjoyable. It is.
Yeah, it's
kind of it's
complicated. There's a lot to it, but it's also it's still drinkable.
Surprisingly clean. The bitterness is a satisfying bitterness. Mm-hmm. Not like that sort of face-pinchy bitterness, depending on who you ask.
Yeah, like honestly, I said that it has the mown grass, but I don't even taste the grass. It's just bitter. It does have that bitter.
Yeah, burnt plants.
It's got a fresh green flavor.
Yeah,
to it.
Yeah, good call. It tastes like the lawn you just mowed.
Does it taste like snakes smell?
Oh! What?
I don't know this story.
There's a story.
I was listening to another podcast, and somebody had written in and told a very terrible story about these people realizing that they had a giant snake pit under their house. And when they came to realize this, they were like on upon reflection, looking back and talking about how the water in the house tasted like snakes smell. Oh. And like, if you've ever walked into a reptile house at a zoo or uh-huh. some kind of place, you know exactly what I'm uh-huh. talking about.
Yes.
So Troy and his haunted. Immense love of snakes, I listened to that story and I was like, oh, rewind. It's like, Troy, you need to listen to this story. And just watching the look on his face as they said the water tastes like snake smell.
I'm haunted by that phrase.
It was just like the highlight of my day that day. I like yeah. cackled about it all the way to work.
I just grossed my husband out because he makes me watch these shitty movies.
Right.
Yes. Well, you can blame
and I
me
was
this
promised
time.
Good beer.
Well, this is good beer. I don't know what you're talking about.
Can you imagine being in the shower and just going to work smelling like snake?
Yeah. Feeling like snakes are pouring down on you from the shower.
I've never seen you so wigged out, Troy. This is yeah. This is amazing.
I just get uncomfortable even thinking about something. So let's talk about the movie and change the subject quick.
So here's what I'll say. I know I always crap on
all the movies.
You
hate snakes that much
that
you'd rather talk
about I'd rather
talk
about
this movie,
yeah.
Absolutely. I did enjoy the high concept costuming on the, I called it the Mos Eisley bar that Ralphie works out of.
Oh, yeah.
And like some, there were some really cool attention to details in the character work and the like costuming and makeup, like the bartender that has clearly that big like cybernetic hand.
Oh, rats.
When he ends up getting his hand cut off by the preacher.
Yeah, the street preacher.
It's metal and tissue. Mm-hmm. Like you see the end of it and it's like, yes, it's, you know, this cybernetic arm, but it's also bleeding. And so while I still said, ew, it was impressive, like that kind of detail to that. Or the concept that I called her the junkie bodyguard. I don't know what mm-hmm. her name was that hung out with Keanu through most of the movie.
Jane.
Where whatever Henry Rollins was doing to treat her shakes was leaving these like little rivets, like mm-hmm. in her arms kind yeah,
little,
of thing.
Little hickeys.
Yeah, or ports of some kind. Yeah. I didn't uh-huh. know really what they were, but... Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that was an interesting detail. The makeup on the other two bodyguard, mm-hmm. potentially women. I feel like one was a woman and one was maybe a man in drag.
Right.
Where they had, like, the lines coming up from their cheeks, like, up, like, the bottom of their chin, like, up to the top of their, like, eyes. So it really gave them this, like, sucked-in, skinny face, mm-hmm. sharp cheek look, but without actually having that. And then I also like the fact that, like, toward the end of the movie, as Keanu is getting supposedly weaker and sicker and whatever, his acting style to show that didn't really change, but his face did. The makeup did. They darkened around his yes. eyes and
hollowed out
and
his cheeks.
He started to get more mm-hmm. like gaunt looking. So
looked sick. He looked like he had a fever.
Yeah, he did. And so like I liked those details and I liked the details of like you could clearly see the difference between the different teams of people based on their outfits mm-hmm. and like that kind of stuff. I really liked all of that. But again, that's why to me this felt like the costumers and the makeup and the, you know, installation art pieces for the sets and those guys really brought it. The other half of the school needs some more work. But
the directing, the acting,
the writing, the script. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure the short story that this is based off of, which I didn't know, is probably a really cool and really good short story. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been optioned into a movie. Mm-hmm. But whoever wrote the script sucked.
Yep.
So
I think that William Gibson, who wrote the short story, he was credited, I think, with writing the script. But I know that he was really unhappy with the movie.
He should have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's miserable.
And his writing style is in such that like he doesn't give any explanations. He just drops you into the world. And then through context clues, you kind of get what's happening. I feel like this movie was definitely not his vision for Johnny Mnemonic. Like the Jane character, the bodyguard chick, in the book, her name was actually Molly. In the story, she actually had retractable claws and like eye implants.
Ah, cool.
The dolphin was also in both. It was a lot more plausible in the book.
As far as a cybernetic dolphin can be.
Right. Yeah. That's a clearly huge departure from the book to the movie if the dolphin is plausible in the story.
I obviously totally bought it because I thought it was real.
You did in this movie.
But it's interesting just as a movie. In 1994, when it was filmed, in 95, when it was released, what people thought the future would be.
That's always fascinating to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, looking back on it, that's that again, what are we going to do looking back in 2050?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting in how in 80s and 90s, like futures, how the Eastern culture has such a big influence.
Mm-hmm.
Like Blade Runner, where like, I mean, so much of that was based on.
Well, the idea that, like, in the 80s, like, Japan had become this sort of economic powerhouse where, like, we weren't buying American televisions and electronics, we were buying Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in that aspect, it follows that, like, 30 years from that point, the Japanese would run everything.
Mm-hmm.
And just like virtual reality was a big thing in the early 90s, it follows that in 2021...
That's how you interact with things, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's my favorite part of this movie, is seeing what 1995... thought 2021 would look like.
I love
that.
Are there films out? Like, it feels like there were lots of examples that we can think of from 80s, 90s that were predicting what 20, 30 years in the future would look like. Are we making movies like that now? Like, are we seeing movies that are set regularly in 2050? Like, I feel like, you know, 2021 from 95 isn't that far.
Isn't that the premise of Black Mirror, though?
I don't know. I haven't watched any of that.
It's an anthology television series about technology in the future and how it affects our lives.
Like, technology run amok. It's like the dark side.
It's not fun to watch. Like, I watched one or two episodes and I'm
Twilight
done.
Zone-y.
Yeah.
Kind of,
but a little more realistic, not so supernatural, but it's pretty grounded in technology.
Yeah, it's about people and how they would respond to a specific technology or a specific aspect of technology to like a ludicrous and dangerous degree.
Mm-hmm.
It is upsetting, but it is really good.
Right.
It really is.
But to answer your question about like, are we making movies now about the future? We are. And for the most part, they are showing technology that is very similar to what's happening now, except with twists. Like, if you look back in, say, like, the 50s, and they were looking in the future, it was, like, shiny suits and, like, aliens with antenna and, like, you know,
right,
robots.
Flying
with,
cars.
Right.
Robots everywhere.
If you look at the 60s and 70s, like, they saw the future as just this clean, sterile environment, as Ella, like, 2001, A Space Odyssey, or, like, dystopian, like, Logan's Run. Or Westworld.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, because that's what I feel like most of what we're seeing right now is like real dystopian with a ambiguous date.
Yeah.
You know, Hunger Games, The Maze.
Maze Runner.
What's the other one? Yeah, The Maze Runner. What's the other one that's got like kids broken into factions as well?
Battle Royale.
I know which one you're talking about. Kate Winslet in it.
Yes. Whatever that one's called. Doesn't matter, but...
Don't know.
But they all seem to have either, like, if it's a utopian future, it's, like, everybody's happy, there's no crime, there's no discomfort. Or a dystopian future, which almost invariably has separated classes, where, like, there's the ultra-rich and powerful, and us, like, the rest of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, William Gibson wrote a lot about, like, those disparities, too, where, like, these ultra-rich, ultra-powerful corporations run everything, not government. And people are left to languish, living off their wits.
Right.
Same thing with like Hunger Games, Maze Runner, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, I mean, the concept of this movie had the potential to become very, very dark. But they kind of made it goofy and accessible.
I don't think they purposely meant it to be goofy.
No, I don't think they did either. And I think that there is that class separation in this story as well. We just don't happen to see it because our hero is somebody who's kind of in the middle and has to rely on the lower end to save his ass. But his goal is to get that thing out of his head so he can move up to that, you know, he wants room service.
Right.
Toward the beginning, when he meets these those nervous clients, he says, like, you're not like the kind of people I normally associate with. And I kind of took that to mean, like, he's used to dealing with more low lives.
Oh, see, I took it to mean he's used to, like, more slick people, because they seem so, like, what's happening? Like, they seemed so...
They were nervous. And they were
nervous, and it's like they were first-timers, and, you know, and they just weren't smooth and polished with it, you know.
Or maybe he's used to dealing with criminals, and these people are very clearly not. Like, so he might be used to dealing with, like, organized crime. Yakuza, maybe, even. There was potential in this movie.
Well, my favorite part of the movie was seeing a couple of old friends.
Oh?
So to speak. And I have to look their names up, but I recognized all of their faces while I was watching. Dina Meyer, who played Jane, she was in
Starship Troopers.
Thank you. And I saw her boobies in Starship Troopers.
Yes.
So that was fun to remember that. Udo Kier, who played Ralphie.
Yeah.
He was in one of my most favorite vampire movies called Shadow of the Vampire with William Dafoe. It was a fictional telling of the making of the movie Nosferatu.
Yes, with Max Schreck.
Yes, yes. Go run to your library and rent that movie right away. That is a marvelous
Actually, I agree with you. Watch Nosferatu first, then watch that.
Yeah, you have to see the source material before you see the fictional telling of the source material.
For sure.
And maybe do a little bit of Googling about Max Schreck. Mm-hmm. He's quite the cad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then his character's name was
Takahashi.
Takahashi, and his name is Takeshi.
Mm-hmm.
Kitano. Takeshi Kitano is one of my samurais. All my old samurai movies that I like to watch, he was Zatoichi, the blind swordsman. When I saw his face, I'm like, oh my God, I know who this guy is. And I watched the whole movie, and then I had to run and go
IMDb
him up, and sure shit, he was Zatoichi. And Zatoichi in the remakes, I might add. It was a really good film. If you like samurai movies, the Zatoichi, the blind swordsman remake was very good. And that's about it. I mean, Dolph was in it, of course. Henry Rollins was in it, but I don't care too much about those guys.
Oh, Henry Rollins, come on. Black Flag.
I know, I like Henry Rollins, too.
I like Henry Rollins, don't get me wrong. And he's shockingly good at everything that he does. Yeah.
I think this is his...
Probably because he's a relentless worker. Yeah. He just doesn't stop working.
And he's a sharp, sharp guy.
Yeah.
He's very smart, yeah.
Way smart.
I mean, if you ever get a chance to listen to or watch some of his spoken word, like, he's just watch him. And I mean, if you're not familiar with his work, his piece work in Black Flag or Rollins Band, like, check it out. It's pretty intense.
He's thought provoking in an angry way, as George Carlin was in a funny way. He just delivers it in a different rapping. Mm-hmm. Rapper, I should say.
You're thinking of Ice-T. Oh.
Free rappers.
Nice, Troy.
That was unintentional. Please continue.
Ice-T, also a prolific rapper and musician. And if you haven't had a chance, listen to his music. Angry, socially conscious music. He's good. And let's not forget Keanu Reeves. No, never mind. Forget that. Forget I said that.
We've talked about Keanu enough.
I like him. I like that he's a good dude. He has some kind of connection. I don't know what it is, whether he just is a fan or what, but if he is in a movie where he gets the opportunity where his character can have anything to do with football, his character's backstory is that they once played for Ohio State. You know, just it'll just come out in like a single sentence somewhere in there. In some way, shape, or form. So
I remember that in Point Break, but I don't know of any other film.
I'm trying to think what's the other. There's another movie where he's some kind of like retired cop.
Oh, really?
I don't know. There's some other.
John Wick used to wipe out kids at Ohio State, I think.
It's a possibility.
The Longest Yard remake? Wasn't
he
in that?
Yeah.
I thought he was in that.
Or, in The Longest Yard? No, I know he wasn't he in that movie Replacements or something? That was
The Replacements. Where
the real NFL players went on strike, and so it was like they brought in like the F team or like people who'd been like rejected or whatever.
And Kathy Ireland was the kicker, and
no, that's a Necessary Roughness.
Oh, yeah, Kathy Ireland was Sinbad. Okay, yeah. Okay, all right. Scott Bakula. I'm getting my dumbass football movies mixed up.
Right.
Wow.
So yeah, it's something to that effect, but yeah. So yeah.
So are we ready to rate this movie?
Yeah. I think it's a good idea.
I think so. All right. We here at Good Beer Bad Movie Night have a unique rating system. We have the 6-pack rating. Well, we'll rate a movie from 0 beers to 6 beers. 0 beers means you need no alcohol to enjoy it, whereas 6 beers means you have to be completely inebriated to even tolerate it. It's worth noting that this is not a measure of the quality of the movie, only a measure of whether or not you actually enjoyed it. So, that being said, hi, Troy.
Hi, Dave. Are you asking how many beers I rate this movie?
Indeed, I am.
Oh, I don't know. I actually was trying to think of this. Like, I did enjoy it, but I can't tell you why. I mean, like, it was a bad movie, and it was badly acted, and I just kind of enjoyed seeing what they were trying to say and then realizing that they were just failing spectacularly. I'm going to give it 4. Not a good
four
movie.
4 beers?
Okay. Yeah.
You gave Ghost Rider 4 beers.
For totally different reasons.
Okay. It's not for me to question why you chose 4.
That's right. It's pretty random.
All right. Kathleen, how many beers do you require to enjoy this movie?
I also said 4 because I really was just bored with this movie. Like, you can only, like, once you've seen each set piece and each costume and makeup one time, there's nothing else to watch because everything else is terrible. So I was just bored. Like, there was a point in the movie where I was playing a game on my phone. I rolled up a whole ball of yarn while I was watching the movie. Like, I was like, can I just actively knit while I'm doing this? No, I do still need to take notes. So,
all right. So 4 for Kathleen. Pete, how many beers do you require to enjoy this movie?
So usually if a movie goes into the 5 and 6 beer realm, it has made me angry for some reason or another. Like,
insulted.
I've been just raging, like, fuck you movie, pretty much. But this movie did not make me angry. It made me a little sad. So for all the prop people who did wonderful props, 4. I'm going to go 4.
All right. 4. Despite the presence of Dina Meyer and B. Takeshi and Dolph Lundgren.
Well, they certainly...
They brought it up to a 4?
Helped it not become a 5. Yes. All
right. And as for me, I'm going to give it 2 beers.
2?
Wow. Yes.
Dave
Again,
loved this movie. He would marry this movie.
That means Dave liked
it. No. I'm going to marry and have a million of its babies. No, this is, again, to reiterate, this is not a measure of how good the movie is, just a measure of how much you kind of enjoyed it or didn't enjoy it. It was not a good movie at all. It was just a cool 1990s time capsule and a cool insight into what people in the 90s thought that today would look like.
Yeah.
For those 2 reasons alone, 2 beers.
Had you seen this before, Dave?
Yes.
Gotcha.
I saw it in the 90s after I had read the book, and I will admit, I fucking hated it in the 90s, and I hated it for a long time after that. And then,
so you thought you'd share it
after
with
years?
Us.
But no, actually, I rewatched it a couple years ago. I'm like, this is still as terrible as I remember, but now I appreciate different things about it, none of which the actual production team intended.
Bet.
So that's 4 for Troy, 4 for Kathleen. 4 for Pete and 2 for me. I am the combo breaker.
I feel like this is the first birthday movie that you've picked that
was it pure 6.
I know obviously The Swarm was, you know, a big one. And then
That'll be on the stars.
Right, that one that I can never remember the title of. But that wasn't a birthday.
That was
one,
a Christmas
right?
movie.
I do admittedly have the worst record for picking movies among the entire cast. At first, I felt bad, but since last year, I feel nothing for all of you.
Now you just embrace it.
Yeah. No, your discomfort actually, it gives me strength. It engorges my muscles.
Maybe that's the lens in which I need to pick my next birthday movie is what is the movie that will give you all the most discomfort?
I mean, I don't know if I want to issue that challenge to you, but like I do now enjoy the idea that I choose movies that make all of you uncomfortable or just that you simply hate because, quite frankly, it strengthens my resolve. It makes me a better person.
To torture your friends. Makes you a better person to torture your friends.
In this context only.
Hey, Kathleen, can you let our listener know how... they can get a hold of
it. I can. I did want to mention that we have potentially a new listener. I was going to give her a shout out. It's somebody that I don't actually know in real life. We've just recently become digital friends, if you will, through a connection from another podcast that we both listen to. And she's new to... the area and was posting about, you know, wishing she had some more connections to people. And I was like, I live in that area. We can chat and be friends. And so I was telling her about the podcast and she was down to listen to him. So if you're listening to this episode, hi, Tirza. And then,
hi, Tirza.
Tirza.
Our other listener,
sorry, Tirza,
would like to. I did fully explain everything to her.
So just so you
yeah, exactly. So anybody else that wants to get a hold of us, our previous listeners who have been longtime supporters, can always email us at gbbmnpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at gbbmnpodcast. On Instagram, we are Good Beer Bad Movie Night, like it's all one word. You can find us on the Facebook at Good Beer Bad Movie Night Discussion Group, I think. And the only other thing that I had to say about this movie is, can any of you explain to me why the top of the Pharmacon building blows up after the download goes live?
No, there's no explanation.
It's the 1990s.
Okay. Nope.
I just wondered if anybody could tell me why the top of the building blew up
when
the download was shared with
everyone.
What
did Ice-T say? Didn't he say like payback?
That
was the explanation.
Maybe.
I don't know. Payback.
Ice-T said a great many things.
Yes.
So yeah.
All right. So I guess that wraps it up for this one. God, thank
and
goodness.
Can I just say explicitly before we go? Yakuza was not making fun of you.
Yeah.
I would not do that.
No, we would not do that.
We love our local Yakuza.
Please don't eat us.
I don't think they eat
people. You don't
know
what they do.
No, okay, fair. That's fair. So, dear listener, we are coming into April. April is the beginning, the very, very beginning of springtime. And springtime is the time of year when our furry forested friends come out of hibernation. They stretch their bones. They look into the sun for the first time in several months.
Stretch their bones?
And stretch their bones. Stretch their bones, right?
I am
muscles,
so
whatever.
Nervous right now.
I'm worried about Pete's
skeleton,
to be honest with you.
Flexible?
Have you ever seen a rubber chicken farm?
Wait.
It's kind of like that. So this is the time of year when our forested friends wake up and begin anew. So I thought it would be appropriate to get a film that featured one of our furry forested friends. So for April, we will be watching the Nature Gone Wild film called Grizzly.
Oh, hell.
Oh, yeah.
don't like it when that's Dave's response to the title of the movie.
I've had this one on the list for a long time, and I am very excited to present it to all of our listener. So with that said, we'll see you guys in April. And until then,
open a $10,000 night. I think that's my only take from that. After that, like, you know, I really want to yell that again. My neighbors are probably like, things are going down in the Wynn household.
I want you to just keep screaming, I want a $10,000 a night hooker over and over again.
More Donna's like, that's me, bitch. Let's go.
You know what? Let me take you off of these headphones. And I would like you to say that louder so she can hear you.
Yeah, exactly.
And the next time you two meet, you may not enjoy that encounter.
No. I might not be welcome.
Oh, you'd be welcome back. You would be welcome right within striking distance. Incidentally, on an unrelated note, do you know what it's like to be stabbed with a mechanical pencil a couple times?
I just finished editing that podcast, so I was like, oh, yeah, we hated the shit out of that. Like I said, Dave's going to do our 6-minute synopsis, and I take that as a no. People shaking your heads. This is an audio cast. 9%, Dave.
Happy birthday to me.
Shame on you. No, I've already crapped myself.
So we here at Good Beer Bad Movie Night have a unique rating system. We have the 6-pack rating. Why are you laughing at me, Pete?
Because you go from like blah to like perfect. Hello, my name is Dave, and I work for NPR.
Bitter butter batter butter butter.
Betty butter butter butter.
No. Oh damn it! Why did I start this? So we here at Good Beer Bad Movie Night have a unique rating system. We have the. We here at Good Beer Bad Movie Night have a unique rating system. It's called Fuck You, Pete and Troy.
That's my favorite.
Is it? Yes. Your hatred of the movie serves to engorge my penis. He's the guy who fucks your mother.
Right.
Two big nasty men.